The following interview features Barrie-based artist and educator Sean George.
So, let's see. My name is Sean George. Born in Brooklyn, New York, to Trinidadian parents who weren't married, and which is important because I was raised by my Trinidadian grandmother until I was 7 years old. So I spent a lot of that time in Trinidad. And then my father's family sort of took me away from there, that nice warm island, to live in Vancouver. And I think I arrived in Vancouver right around the time I was about to turn 9. I had to stay in Los Angeles for a year to figure out a whole bunch of paperwork with an aunt. And so I lived there for a year and lived in Vancouver. My mom and my mom settled with a man in Toronto. And so eventually I came to Toronto to live with them. Went to Sheridan, then got a diploma, went out west to Vancouver, went to Emily Carr, got a BA, Fine Arts, and ended up at the Vancouver Art Gallery. And was there for 15 years.
Wow.
Yeah, until I had a bit of a breakdown, like a serious mental health breakdown, and decided to come back to Ontario and connect with my mom and my stepdad, which I think in retrospect was the best darn thing I ever did.
Wow.
Yeah.
And we met, just to give some folks some perspective, you and I met at the Vancouver Art Gallery. That's how our connection started, right?
That's right. That's right. Yes. Yeah. That's right.
So we're speaking to you from Barrie today, right?
That's right. Yep.
Tell us what you're doing in Barrie now.
So I do, like always, I do a lot of things that are related to the arts. When I came here, I decided that I really wanted to full on pursue my own artwork. Because I've been at the Vancouver Art Gallery working with other people's artwork in the public programs and education department. And I'd always sort of been loosely exhibiting in kind of group shows, organizing stuff at like little galleries in Vancouver, like Interurban, which was in the heart of Pigeon Park in downtown Vancouver. And in 2010, I had my first solo exhibit at the Grunt Gallery, and Robin Lawrence, who was the arts critic for the Georgia Strait newspaper, she said I was one to watch for, top 10 shows upcoming. So I opened the newspaper. I was like, wow, I didn't even know I was somebody to watch. I've been mounted.
That's wonderful.
So it was great. And then it just really, and it just came at a time in my life where I was just really suffering because I hadn't really been looking after my mental health. And so my parents suggested I come home. And so when I came here, I said, you know, I really just want to pursue my career and, you know, be a starving artist and know that my mother could feed me if need be. And, you know, as things work out, I immediately got involved in the art scene. I met Sally Frater. When she was in Vancouver, she came to Vancouver to see the Carrie James Marshall show, I think it was. I can't even remember. Anyways, she gave me her card. I called her when, you know, after I was a little more settled. And she told me that the OAC was having a Afro-Canadian panel on, you know, art. And did I want to join that? And I said, sure. So I went there and found out I knew a few people there and then started applying for grants. Ended up getting my first grant in 2012 to do a project with Mental Health of Simcoe County. And so between 2012 and 2016, I think I got 5 grants.
Wow.
And so the OAC was kind of like, we've got to stop him from getting more grants. we're going to hire him. So they hired me on contract to help artists in Simcoe County write grants or facilitate them, encourage them, support them, in particular doing community art, which mm-hmm. is, you know, three of the five grants that I've received, ones for community art projects. And for me, the way I define community art is rather than, you know, me making art about homelessness, why not go to those people who are, you know, involved in that, who are living those lives, mm-hmm. and work with them to make art about their experience. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's something I had sort of done a little bit at the Vancouver Art Gallery. Like, I was part of a pilot project with seniors at seniors' residences, where we were doing these multiple visit outreach projects, which were successful. But the gallery had really no use for it because it really, there was no money in it. So, I mean, that's the long and that's really the long and short of the answer. They would never say that, mm-hmm. that's saying that, but that was really why they weren't interested in it. And so I was always interested in, and I did a lot of work with Art Starts in Schools in Vancouver, and they basically, you know, put artists in schools to do like 6-week residencies, work with elementary and high school students. So I did like about, probably 6 of those projects at least. So yeah, when I came here, my goal was to really try to focus more on my own work, but I got sort of caught up in doing community art, which I really enjoy because I think it really expands mm-hmm. and enriches my own practice. But I have to strike a better balance between doing that and doing my own work. And I'm trying. I mean, it's a work in progress.
You talked about family, like how, and you, the community arts work that you do. Can you talk a bit more about that, the fact that community and family are so important to you in the work that you do, and then maybe connect that back to reflecting on those issues within the context of a public institution or a public art gallery, the opportunities, but also that obviously it contributed to your decision to move on from places like Vancouver Art Gallery.
Yeah, so when I came here, I started going for counseling at Mental Health of Simcoe County. And once the counseling was done, I really liked my counselor. And I made her like a little thank you. I think it was some sort of painting collage. I wish I'd actually photographed it. Anyways, so she encouraged me to come and volunteer. And so I started volunteering, and that's when I wrote the first grant. So for me, an integral part of doing community art, which I think is really important, is, you know, not to take on a particular social issue, but to, you know, sort of have some familiarity, if not a great deal of familiarity, with that particular cause. Because my own fine art practice has revolved around identity, like race, sexuality, stuff like that. So I feel the same way with community art. Like, I'm not going to go do something about, you know, rich white ladies who are struggling. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I have no clue, right?
I don't think there's a big need for work in that area, actually. I think it's well supported.
Yeah. You know, and in terms of really connecting with my family, it gave me a lot of opportunity to reconnect with my mom and my stepdad, in that, you know, we'd always sort of never had a lot of family time. And so when I moved back here, we got a good chance to, I got a really good opportunity to know them more as an adult, right? And that became really important to me. And in fact, I actually started going back to church with my parents. I was raised in the Seventh-day Adventist faith. And so I started going back to church. You know, I liked it, and I say that with some hesitancy. I liked it, and there are lots of great things about it, including, you know, people, some of the people. Mm-hmm. And I got involved with a couple of the youth groups there, which I still am. And so fairly recently, because every quarter, every season, they allow one layperson an opportunity to preach a sermon. And so I was allowed an opportunity. And so I basically came out to my church. And it was a sermon on basically religion and sexuality.
Wow.
And in a church that doesn't, they're not too welcoming to the gays.
How was it received?
You know, it always amazes me that the people you think will be, really great with it were a little uncomfortable. And then some of the sort of more staunch traditionalists were actually okay. They thanked me for, speaking my truth. And there was one elderly lady who was like, "My gosh, it's about time we heard something real here."
Wow.
I was like, "Oh, okay." I thought she was going to smack me or something. Anyway, so, that was really, in a way, I wanted to mention that because I think, after kind of having this mental health breakdown, part of what was really missing for me was having more of a spiritual connection. Getting sort of my mental health back on track, my physical life back on track, my intellectual life back. All the pieces were falling into place, and it was that kind of spiritual that was kind of missing. Mm-hmm. And I'm still sort of cobbling that together. I'm still not sure about church as a option for me, and I'm working with it. But in terms of being a gay man within my family, both my mom and stepfather are fully supportive and loving. So that's never really been an issue, Sure, there's some extended family members who are a bit weird, but, that's their, problem, right?
Yeah.
So, for me, I like to work from the, most artists, I believe, work from the sort of four things you have questions about. And so definitely sexuality, spirituality, race, all of those things. And in doing community work, like I said, I kind of get a real sense of what is out there, right? Mm-hmm. And I always, that was one of the things about being in church as a kid. I liked going to church as a kid. I liked dressing up and singing. And then, when puberty hit, I was like, uh-oh. I'm not kind of hearing what I thought was Jesus loves me. So, for me, finding those particular issues that are uncomfortable issues, maybe even for me and for others, is a great way to explore ideas in my own art making and in community practice. Yeah. Does that sort of make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's so many questions I have for you. You have such an interesting life. First thing I'll ask about is that you mentioned balance, and I know that I struggle with that as well. I think so many people in the arts really have a challenge of doing so many different things, whether it's arts administration, arts education, being an artist, and all of these things. I don't think we actually discuss how individual these different kind of practices are. They do inform each other, but they are very different things.
Well, absolutely, yeah.
So many of us struggle with balance, but we were speaking with artist Charmaine Lurch last week, and she said she gave up on trying to find balance, and she's just trying to now be comfortable with the fact that some weeks or some days, one aspect of her life demands more attention. Maybe it's her family, and then maybe the next week she has more focus on, her art practice. And
yeah, actually, I saw years ago, it's called Drawing the Passing. It's a documentary on the South African artist William Kentridge.
Oh, yeah.
And he was talking about that. And he's so articulate and just in a really down-to-earth way. And basically said, that was his biggest struggle. He wanted to do all these things, but he didn't want to seem like a bit of a dilettante. Yeah. Like, he was interested in opera, he was interested in drawing, he was interested in animation, he was interested in puppets. He was, and then he's like, well, why can't I do all these things? And so I've kind of come to terms with the fact that my cultural work, so doing this contract for the OAC, which I'm told they're asking to renew my contract for another year. So this would be going into my third year. So doing that kind of work serves the purpose. It keeps me connected to one part of the art world. It pays the bills. It allows me to help other artists and mentor other artists.
Yeah.
And then, you know, doing my own practice kind of in a way feeds a part of me that I get satisfaction from that.
Yeah.
You know, like I put two art pieces into the art auction at the McLaren Art Center, and I also introduced three artists to that art auction. And of the four of us, all of theirs sold and mine didn't. And you know what? I was okay with it. I was like, I'm going to take these home. And I was really happy.
Yeah.
because I'm satisfied with my art making today. Yeah. I mean, it can be for others, obviously, but it's also intrinsically for me. I don't need to become Andy Warhol or whoever. Yeah. I'm satisfied with the pleasure sometimes I get if I stay up till two at night and work on something.
Yeah.
You know, so that part, and then, you know, that community art piece, it's an interaction with people in the community by and large who don't have any background in the arts but have an interest in it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, have bodies of knowledge that, you know, I know nothing about. And Andrew and I have talked about this. You know, when you work at a large institution, art institution, you meet all kinds of people, like pilots and doctors, and they have, like, amazing lives. But they don't necessarily know what I might know about art, and that's okay. But I can learn something from them, and, you know, hopefully they can learn something from me. So working with community art, I always have to try to remember that I'm there to collaborate, but also I'm there to learn.
What do you think, you know, in terms of your mental breakdown, in terms of being, like, in Vancouver for 15 years and at the art gallery there, do you think it was, you know, an imbalance in terms of, like, focusing on outwardly, like, on...
Yeah, I think it, absolutely, you hit the nail on the head. It was a total imbalance, like, people were there that were leaving. And from time to time, I would see them. They'd go, why are you still here? You're so bright. And I would always, in the back of my mind, thought I was going to become the director. Like, not really. But do you know what I'm saying? Like, I always thought there was some greater thing. Or sometimes I would lie to myself and say, well, it's really important for people of color to see me here. Yeah. And that was the case early on. But, you know, it's really important for people of color to see me do other things too, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was really embedded there, and I didn't realize how sick it was actually making me, because, you know, I mean, Andrew can tell you, it is an institution in a lot of ways, right? And I hadn't realized how sick it was making me. And being single, I was going home with a lot of that tension and the politics and, you know, some of the bullshit, you know, just out and out bullshit. And it was just like, wow. You know, and until I left, I began to understand why every time I saw people who had left, they seemed so happy.
It's,
you know?
Yeah.
So
I find that, like, such a challenging place to be, the idea of being like, well, you know, I need to be in this place so that other people of color can see that there are these opportunities that do exist within institutions and whatnot. But at the time, as I'm sure that you've experienced, that institutions, you know, don't really facilitate healthy ways of navigating.
I mean, you basically move laterally. You don't move up. You don't move down. You have to leave in order to come back. It's a game, like, you know, it's like you're a yo-yo, right?
Yeah.
I was having a conversation with somebody else this morning about what are the barriers to change and diversity within cultural institutions. And one of the things that I was talking about, which is, it's one thing to bring, it's to gather together a more diverse community of people within a place like Vancouver Arkell or the Arkell of Ontario or whatever. But if the fundamental cultural wiring of the institution about how people work, how people relate to each other, how the work is done doesn't change, we're just bringing people into a very unhealthy world, right?
And I think that's a huge can of worms. Like, you know, yeah, like what's going on right now in Hollywood, I mean, I'm not surprised, but I always used to think about that with the art world, like, you know, this sort of move towards ethics and artists making works about social issues and things like that. But often behind the scenes, the ethical, the ethical framework was really tenuous, right? Like, I had a few run-ins with a few benefactors that I would out and out say were racist. Bottom line, you know? And so, you know, but then on the other hand, there were these amazing shows by artists who I consider extremely ethical and, you know, current and pushing, you know, new ideas. So it's this really weird thing, right? Like, you know, if you look at some of the films that Harvey Weinstein, you know, those are some pretty amazing films, right? But then on the other hand, like, who was he as a person? Right? You know, so it's a weird, weird situation. And I don't know that, I certainly know that I can't change it, and I certainly don't want to try. Like, my run there was more than long enough. And, you know, Vancouver is a diverse city, and I hope that, you know, more people of color will get involved in those kinds of institutions. Because I do remember, like, doing school programs with, even the fact that I was a male, taking a group of students around would excite little boys, right? Like, they would be like, wah! Because, you know, typically they would get, like, a blue-haired old lady who was white, you know? So those were, like, really important things to me early on. And then after, it just became, like, how can I make more change? And the institution was not about changing.
Yeah. Do you think, I've been thinking about this a lot lately, that in a way, you were talking about it in Hollywood with films, but also the artists who exhibited these institutions, that, and this isn't a critique of the artists, but that that becomes a kind of facade to the reality of what's behind. And in fact, that these institutions, because they can say publicly, oh, we are progressive, we are engaged, because look, we did a Theaster Gate show in Toronto, but actually it just masks the underlying reality, right?
Because, you know, let's, I mean, to me, a good example of that is, you know, then people, they would turn around and say, well, you know, this is what I always heard in any case, was that, oh, the board of directors, like, this is, you know, blah, 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 and they're the ones who fund these shows and blah, blah, blah. Well, let me tell you something. In a community like Vancouver, there was a lot of money in other communities, in the Asian community, in the Iranian community, you know, there was a lot of money, right? Even within some of the First Nations communities, like the Haida community, right? They would the gallery then make an attempt to reach out to those communities? No. So really, they didn't want to change. They wanted to keep it as a very specific club. And so, you know, I don't see that that is changing, like, that climate. I don't see that it's changing. You know, it's interesting, like, I was talking about my church. That's one of my biggest critiques of my church, and most churches, is that the population makeup of most churches is 75% female. And who runs these churches? All men. You know, and, you know, both my mom and I think that's absolutely disgusting, as does my sister, who lives in California and goes to a black church, which is the makeup there's a little bit different, and, you know, it's quite interesting, but, like, we've had lots of discussions about this. Like, there was a couple of female ministers, and the church she goes to, there's a female minister who's the youth minister and stuff like that, and there are changes that are beginning to happen. But every single time, it's like these people get stomped on.
Well, I would think, you know, religion is maybe it can just be a location where change moves a little bit slower. But I do, I think it's really interesting that you talk about going to a Seventh-day Adventist church. Personally, my dad's side of the family were Nigerian, and I just went to Nigeria for the first time last year and met a ton of family, and you know, all my family are you know, very staunchly Christian, and it was amazing meeting them. They like everything they do is quite big. They love big and fierce and wonderful, and they're like, okay, now let's go to church. And I was like, maybe not. I'm kind of busy all day Sunday, and I really.
It's a bit of a spectacle. You should have gone.
I know. I really should have. I mean, these are huge mega churches, right? With like, I don't know, like 3,000 people attending. But it was really interesting because I just had a different understanding of it. And I feel like they were very, there's just, you know, there's all these kind of layers of structure that from the outside aren't necessarily as clear. Like you said, you know, some of the older women, you know, were happy to hear you talk about sexuality and spirituality. I feel like my cousin was very happy to talk to me about the fact that my mom's a lesbian and that I, you know, like LGBT issues in her church are not really discussed. But for the most part, with the older generation, it was something that was ignored. You know, it was just like, let's not talk about it. It exists, but it was like, we'll just keep that on there.
We'll shove it under the carpet.
Yeah.
But I think for me, the two things that tie both of these kinds of institutions together is that in my life, I was taught very early on that if I wanted to change something, I had to be in it rather than on the outside of it.
That's a really...
Yeah.
So, like, and to my fault, that's why I stayed at the Vancouver Art Gallery so long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And that's why now at my church, I almost feel like I've done what I needed to do there. And I don't want to stay there and sort of sink into, I don't want to call it the fray, but just sort of sink, right?
Yeah.
I want to rise above. My minister who allowed me to do this, he's now moved to a larger church in Toronto. And so he wants me to come down and help him plan a little forum on sexuality.
Wow.
No, and the guy who baptized me was another minister. They're both very progressive. Like, these are people that are, you know, like the whole younger generation now that you see coming up through the ministry, they are, you know, going to like UFT, like to, you know, secular universities. So they're getting a sense of why change is necessary, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they're still dealing with a lot of that old way of thinking and those dynamics, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, like, I feel like I'd rather do more things like that. And that's what he encouraged me to do, is to, you know, perhaps maybe, like, take that idea on the road and, you know, go with it, right? Like, make myself available.
And do you feel like you are, like that you would be engaging those kinds of conversations specifically with Seventh-day Adventist churches, or like do you feel like you?
Yeah, because they, you know, Seventh-day Adventist churches aren't. I would describe them as evangelical. I think they're as Protestant as any other Protestant church. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, for the sake of, you know, there's nothing strange or startling about them, and they do a lot of good work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mostly in the medical community. But, you know, by and large, I think that opening myself to communities where that discussion around LGBT and religion and sexuality,
yeah,
that's really vital. Because, you know, coming up and coming out as a young gay man, I met, like, half of the people I met had been raised in Christian homes, you know, and many of them were turned out of those homes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like from Jehovah's Witness to, yeah, you know, the range of them. You know, yeah, one of the first guys I remember meeting in Toronto, he was also Seventh-day Adventist, and his family basically disowned him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, my situation was a little bit different because my father's family, although they're bright and, you know, very well educated, they are the type of people that believe it's okay to know gay people, but we don't want one in our family.
Oof.
You know, whereas my mother's family on the other side, they're like quite staunch, but in many ways, they love unconditionally.
Yeah.
Right? So, and my mom's a hairdresser, so, you know, I always have to laugh and say my mom knows more gay men than I do. And that's not a stereotypical thing, it's actually true, right? She does. She knows more gay men than I actually do.
So one more question, and I hope it's okay. Come back to the stresses and the mental health issues within the art world, within museums. And because in this particular series, conversations that Liz and I are having with Black artists and curators and writers, in your experience, I wanted to ask if you feel that mental health is a particularly prevalent issue for people in the Black community, acknowledging that that's a fairly diverse community. That in dealing with these cultural organizations, the kind of added, you know, I mean, somebody like myself, I've been very open about the mental health struggles I have working within an institution like the AGO, but I'm not bringing, I don't have to face the barriers that many people do.
Yeah, I mean, I speak, you know, quite openly about it. Like, I don't use drugs and alcohol today because for years and years, I did not know that I suffered with depression. In going to a psychiatrist in Vancouver, it was finally uncovered, like, early as grade 5. You know, I went into a garage on my way to school. I was just, like, happy riding my bike to school, and suddenly I wasn't happy. And I went in this garage, and I laid there all day, you know, like, kind of curled up in a ball, and I didn't know what the hell that was. And, you know, it was years later, and then impounded by that, I was working at the VAG. I was teaching at the Art Institute, a design history course. I was also doing continuing studies at Emily Carr University, a course called Public and Private Art Galleries. And, you know, my plate was full, and I just started to drink, and that just made my mental health really, really bad. I know that it's a huge issue that in the art world, it's not talked about. Like, I know in particular with a good handful of First Nations artists I know personally who suffer with mental health and addiction issues, and it's not discussed. And it's been a, you know, it's part of the history within the arts and within creative people, right? It's embedded with, I personally think it's embedded within a lot of creative people. Right? And it's almost like nobody wants to talk about it. That's what I feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like a piece that we don't talk about and don't talk about enough and in meaningful ways. For me, a big part of moving through this was going to ongoing counseling and writing and journaling a lot and recognizing that, you know, it's something that I have to look after, right? Like, I mean, I got shingles because I was working so much, right? And at the time I got it, which was like almost 13 years ago, somebody of my age should not have been getting shingles.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the nature of the beast. What you were talking about earlier was that, you know, you have to juggle so many different hats sometimes in order to sort of stay above. And even if it's not about money, it's also about where do I want to go? Well, I want to be a curator. I want to be this. So you always have to take these things on in order to achieve more. And that's something else we don't talk about. We don't talk about the addiction to work.
Yep.
Right? Like, I clocked 15 days straight at the Vancouver Art Gallery, in fact. Was it 15 or 16 days straight during the Andy Warhol exhibit with no days off? And I thought I was doing good. And then, you know, the next day, I had a day off. And getting ready, I was going to go with a friend to Hornby Island and have a break. And, you know, I got out of the shower and I was like, oh, my God, am I having a heart attack? Went to the hospital, find out I had shingles. And so it's like there's a lot of unpacking there.
Yeah.
And I think part of that unpacking is that artists need to be supported. You know, that they shouldn't have to have 15 jobs in order to live a good life. And institutions should recognize what's healthy and not healthy, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I see it, like, you know, I see it where I am right now because I do contract work with the McLaren Arts Center, and I see their programmer, and she's working really hard, and it's no fault of anyone there. It's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Like, she's doing the job of, like, five people, and it, like, blows me away. And every time I see her, I was like, I don't want that to be me, because that was me. So, you know, I think that it is a really important subject, and there are lots of different ways of coming at it, but I think the bottom line is it's about supporting artists.
Yeah, and I think the last thing, too, is to, you were saying it's not something talked about in the gallery and museum and the art world, the mental health issues, but often when it does surface, it's more to do with the narrative of an artist, where almost like to it almost becomes kind of glorified. In I think about the Kusama show that's coming to the AGO, and part of her story is this sort of questionable narrative about a mental health history and its treatment, which is sort of adding to the work and people's understanding of it. And it's not particularly a healthy way of seeing mental health in the wider culture.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I'll tell you a little story that's really interesting. St. Paul's Hospital in Vancouver, there's an amazing psychologist there. He was head of their psychology department. And he, in fact, wanted to do a whole series around unpacking that very idea. And the gallery actually refused.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Well, I thought let's maybe a happy thought at the end.
I've been working. I got a residency to go to New York. I'm still waiting to go because I'm waiting for my permanent residency card. I am stupidly still an American, but I'm getting Canadian citizenship this year. Once that comes through, I'm going to New York to work with this book artist. And I'm working on a graphic novel about this black woman. And it's going to be like my own words, ideas, with collage bits. And some of the background will be photographs that I've also taken. So there'll be kind of weird elements to it. I don't know what will happen with it, but that's what I received the grant for, or the residency grant for, to mentor with this guy. And I'm really excited about it.
That sounds amazing. Where is the residency? Is it with this graphic novelist?
He's not even actually a graphic novelist. His background was in photography, and he's Canadian. He moved to New York in the 1970s. And then he sort of moved away from photography and started working with books as sculptural objects.
Wow.
And just, I really appreciated the way in which he sort of has moved the idea of the artist book from just like a kind of loose sort of coffee table thing to something that can be a little bit more multifunctional. So I wanted to work with him because I don't see this really so much as a graphic novel, but I don't see it really so much as an artist book, so I kind of want to figure that out, and that's what the residency is about. How do I present this in a way that will be satisfying? And I really enjoy working on it, and you know, at the end of the day, if I have to self-publish and nobody buys it, I'll still be happy to have it at home.
Okay, well, we'll need two copies, one for Lizzie.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yes, please.
Thank you so much.
Well, it's such a pleasure to talk to you, and it's and a privilege to continue to be in touch with you.